You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Happy Wednesday, everybody. Welcome into another edition of the Locked On Pacers podcast, where, of course, we talk about the Indiana Pacers. And today, it is July 1st, which means the NBA is officially probably back this month. I have to put a caveat on that every time. But today, we're going to talk about playoff seeds, because I've talked about that on a lot of shows, about how the Pacers, you know, home court doesn't matter as much anymore. So really angling for the premier opponent is the way to go. But, you know, I think they should try to get the Heat. But whatever, we'll see how it goes. They're going to be competing with the Sixers and Heat specifically for a seed. And today, joining me to figure out how the Sixers and Pacers, who are tied in the standings, might duke it out and finagle for seeding. Sixers Adam Aronson from the Rights to Ricky Sanchez, formerly SB Nation Sixers site. Adam, how you doing, man?
Doing well. How are you?
I'm also doing well. And the schedule makers were kind to us, Adam, because they kept that Pacers-Sixers game that was right about to happen. And it's still, it's the most important game for the Pacers. I'm imagining it's the most important game for the Sixers as well.
Yeah, it is.
Basically, the winner of that game gets so much control over the seed they get. And the Sixers' schedule is pretty easy in general, right?
Yeah, so the Sixers have the second easiest schedule, according to ESPN. But the thing is, they've been playing down to their competition. I think they're 5-9 against the teams that they're playing, and these are bad teams. It's, you know, Indiana, San Antonio, who are okay, but teams like Phoenix and Washington and Orlando, teams that they have all year played down to. And so the hope on the Sixers side would be that all this time off gives them some sort of renewed sense of urgency, that they come in and they can beat down on teams that just have less talent than they do. But, you know, on paper, it does look like an easy schedule.
So before we get too logistical about controlling your destiny and seed control, so the Sixers are amazing at home and terrible on the road this year. So is this good for them or bad for them? Because technically every team is on the road besides the Magic every game.
Yeah, I keep getting asked this and I just don't know. I mean, listen, they were 29-2 at home and they were 10-24 on the road. It's like impossibly.
That is just wild.
I can't imagine there's ever been a larger discrepancy in like any team sport ever than that.
I was joking that I thought it was pretty funny that the NBA still released the schedules, like with Sixers at Pacers as the first game.
Yeah.
So the Pacers are the home team, right? Does that mean that they're going to easily walk all over the Sixers?
Right.
Even though the Sixers would have been home in the real game.
Yeah, in the end, I struggle to you know, decide that it's going to tilt them in one direction or the other. There are just too many, like, it's just such an unprecedented situation for every team to deal with that I can't really predict which way it's going to lean.
Yeah, I think it's going to be fascinating. I doubt it matters for anyone at all. I think it's just going to be a neutral thing. That's why it's called neutral site. But, you know, it could be interesting for maybe there is something to the Sixers getting up for games at home, which will matter in the playoffs when there is no home games for either team. But Right. That's what I want to talk about, playoff seeds in general and why the Pacers and Sixers competing goals is really important. So I guess a good first question is, if you're a Sixers fan or if you're the Sixers team, who is your ideal first-round opponent?
So I'm a little uneasy saying this because they're a very good team, and in the past they were a matchup nightmare for the Sixers. But I lean Boston because that's the one matchup where I look at it and I say, I don't know who can possibly defend Joel Embiid.
Yes.
And if you just give Embiid – now, the Sixers don't have, you know, the proper personnel around Embiid and Simmons, which is its own discussion. But if you could get Embiid post-touches – like Daniel Tice is a very good player. Like Robert Williams is interesting. Enes Kanter is bad. Like Embiid is just gonna feast on that group of bigs. And not that there wouldn't be some sort of matchups that favor the Celtics. And the Celtics are just like a better team. But I think that matchup with Embiid versus the Celtics bigs would be pretty overwhelming.
Yeah, having a clear way to score any given possession in the playoffs is pretty nice. A lot of Pacers people think that the Celtics is a prime matchup for the Pacers for the exact same reason, right? Who the hell is going to guard Sabonis? Well, Tice is pretty good, but like you said, he's shorter. He's going to be shorter, and their other two centers are young and junk in terms of Cantor and Williams. So there looks like there should be a matchup advantage there. Now, that has not materialized in a substantial way for the Pacers in the regular season, though it has been good, just not great. But for the Sixers, obviously, Embiid is 7-8 ticks higher than Sabonis. That seems like the move. So the Sixers' goal then would be to be the sixth seed, correct?
Right.
So they want to lose to the Pacers in the first game.
Right. And so, yeah. And I would imagine that was going to be your next question of where they should be. I would be avoiding the 4-5 matchup if I were them. They'd just be so much better off waiting as long as they can to play the Bucks because, yes, the Sixers did have a very impressive win over the Bucks on Christmas. They completely obliterated them. But, I mean, the Bucks are just so
damn they shoot good. Like 1,000,000% that game?
Yeah, they tie the franchise record for most made threes. And, to be fair, their defense was excellent. And Embiid was unbelievable against Giannis. And he
also 18 for Giannis.
Points.
Only 18.
Yeah, Embiid, I had a tweet from the time where I put together all of the shots that Giannis took against Embiid. Giannis would just go bowling into him, and Embiid just stood him up and kept blocking him and stuffing him at the rim. That was a really impressive game. But anyways, I don't think that that they should be seeking out that matchup by any means, and I would be avoiding it. So if they could stay in the sixth seed, especially because it's hard to really quantify home court in any way, since these are all neutral site games now. It's not like there's a distinct advantage of being the 4 versus the 5. I think sticking in the 6 seed would be the right move.
Yeah, I was hoping you would not pick the Celtics for your answer to the first question, because there's a lot more layers to this discussion if it's you're trying to avoid Boston and also Milwaukee, because for me, and something else that I will get to in a second is the Pacers' goal in the playoffs is probably not to make the conference finals or in the finals. In fact, the reporting says that given there's a pandemic, their goal is health and they'll play a 10-man rotation. But either way, given what they were at the start of this season, their goal was win a round, right? We got better this offseason. We went to win a round. So yeah, the Bucks are a consideration, right? If you don't care about your first round opponent, try to avoid the Bucks. But if you think there's a team you can just pummel, you should win a round, accomplish your goal, prepare for next season, try to get better then. And that's why I'm so pro playing the Heat. Even though the Heat are obviously really good, there's a reason they're ahead of both the Pacers and the Sixers in the standings, is there's a better chance they beat the Heat and they would move on. So I'm pro the Pacers getting the 5, whereas with the Sixers, if the team you want is the Celtics, it doesn't even matter if you think if they're the team that you think you have a better chance of beating, then 6 is just too obvious.
Right. Yeah, it really does for the combination of, the Embiid matchup that we just discussed, and you would be avoiding the Bucks in round 2. Just sticking in the 6 seed and facing Boston, and then the winner of the Toronto series, I suppose, if you beat Boston.
Their schedule's crazy hard.
Yeah, I think they're up 3 games on
2.5, 3 something
on Boston.
Like that.
Yeah, they're up 3 games on Boston. Yeah, so that'll be tough to overcome in just 8 games. Yeah. But Toronto does have one of the toughest schedules, I believe.
So what's the situation? There's a pick involved with the Sixers as well, right? Their own pick would be gone.
So their own pick is going regardless, because that's lottery protected. They gave it to the Clippers in the Tobias Harris trade.
Oh, I got the wrong pick.
The Clippers gave it to the Nets at the draft last year for Fiondu Cabangele.
Okay.
But also the Sixers have OKC's first round pick.
That's what
from the right. So they have from the Markel Fultz trade when they traded him to Orlando, not the one where they traded Jason Tatum and a lottery pick for somebody who would get traded for Jonathan Simmons. This pick is top 20 protected. If it doesn't convey this year, it turns into 2 second rounders. And right now OKC is tied for 21st. They're a game and a half ahead or behind, however you want to call it. They're a game and a half better than the team in the 20th spot, which coincidentally is the Sixers and the Pacers. They're the same record.
Tanking to keep your own draft picks.
Right. And that's probably something that they're cognizant of, that like, it's going to be tougher for OKC to jump into the top 20 if, you know, they can't keep pace with the Sixers in terms of losing. So like that might actually factor into their calculus. And it's just another reason that, like, not taking these regular season games particularly seriously, aside from, you know, the normal tune-up stuff and getting back in the flow that every team is using it for, why that might make sense.
Yeah, you got ahead of my question, which is convenient. But I was going to say, I think for the Sixers, that's convenient in that, you know, I talked about with the Pacers schedule, it's nice to have the Sixers one early, because if you win, you have a ton of control over where you finish if you have a desired spot. With the Sixers, even if they lose, they can kind of say, well, okay, you know, our next five games are against not so great teams. Let's just ease everybody in with manageable minutes and hold the sixth spot, because they can't even fall to seven. It's not possible, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. So just, you know, play Joel 25 minutes a game, you know, go 3-5 in these games, keep our pick, right, get the six. That is if you lose to the Pacers in the first game. I mean, even if they beat the Pacers, they might try that strategy.
Yeah. And I would add that, I mean, Embiid, yes, he's had now like 3 or 4 months off, but Embiid has never held up well late in the season. This would be the first time he's healthy, like truly healthy, in the playoffs in his entire career.
Yeah.
Which is impressive given that he was actually very effective in the playoffs.
I don't even care that they had months off. I would still rest guys once my season locked up.
Yeah. Especially because you don't want to ramp them up too quickly.
Yep.
Also, like, Ben Simmons coming off a pretty bad back injury that he seems to be recovering well from, but was pretty bad at the time. There was a story that he was vomiting from pain.
Wow.
And Brett Brown said it was like the most horrifying in like player related injury he had ever seen. And this is like a coach who saw like Joel Embiid almost like have to retire and Markelle Fultz have whatever the hell Markelle Fultz had. And like Zaire Smith a couple of years ago, like literally almost died from an allergic reaction. This is a team and a coach that has seen a lot, and they seem particularly jarred by Ben Simmons' back injury. So I think it's safe to say it was not good. And everybody knows back injuries are not something to mess with.
Hey guys, as usual, we're going to take a break to talk about the great people over at Rock Auto. One reason to repair and maintain your car or cars is to save money that you can use for other stuff like your mortgage, your food, fun stuff, preferably not going out right now, but eventually going out. Why would you choose to spend 30%, 50%, even 100% more for the exact same auto parts at a chain store or a new car dealership when you could spend less at rockauto.com? They have cheap everything that you need. They're a family-owned business. They serve auto part customers online for 20 years. Go to rockauto.com to shop for auto and body parts from hundreds of manufacturers. Best of all, their prices are always reliably low and the same for professionals and do-it-yourselfers. Why spend twice as much for the same parts? Go to rockauto.com right now. See all the parts made available for your car and truck. Right, Locked On in their How Did You Hear About Us box. They know that we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, and all the parts your car will ever need at rockauto.com.
Yeah, like the Pacers, the Sixers probably would have lost Simmons for the rest of the regular season and some of the playoffs, like the Pacers had with Brogdon, but now they get their guys, which is pretty helpful.
Yeah.
Extremely helpful, actually. Yeah, and so the crux of this to me, in that I think that if the Pacers want the 5 seed to play the Heat, they'll have every opportunity to get it, is, like you said, you know, there's this pick involved, which is why I brought it up, and that's huge. And if the Sixers really like the Celtics, that's also huge. But the one that's always stuck out to me is, even if you think the Celtics would be harder than the Heat for the Sixers or the Raptors or whoever, is that the 76ers are super talented, and they, you know, they gave Tobias Harris $1 jillion and they got Josh Richardson because they thought, we're right there for a title. And they were really close last year to making it. That's why they got Horford and did all that other stuff I just said. Now, some of that stuff hasn't worked out, but they're still really effing good. And they have 2.5 all-stars, basically, in total. I'm counting a quarter of Tobias Harris and a quarter of Al Horford, although Horford's been drunk this year. Okay. That team should be trying to make the finals. And I think that if that means avoiding Milwaukee till you last possibly can, then that alone to me is enough of a reason to stay six, even if the Celtics stuff and the Thunder stuff wasn't involved.
Yeah, I mean, listen, like the truth is they went into this thinking that they had a team that could win the East and win the finals. And that's the lens through which they've made all of their moves, really dating back to the Jimmy Butler trade last November, when they went they cashed in Covington and Saric on Butler, and then they cashed in basically every other asset they had on Tobias Harris a few months later. Then they doubled down on Harris with $180 million. And right. When Butler walks, they use that money on Horford, who's obviously, like, you know, past his prime, and that's especially become clear this year. But I mean, the truth is, like, I just don't think this team is good enough to be that.
Oh,
yeah. They don't fit. It doesn't, it, like, it just doesn't make sense.
I thought Horford and Embiid was going to be so perfect, and it has.
I figured it would be like a little weird offensively because they're both centers, but I thought it would be like fine in the grand scheme of things. But I mean, it boils down to this. You have a low post center and a primary initiator who does not shoot jump shots ever. And the Sixers do not surround them with shooting, and they do not surround them with enough ball handling. It's and they like stumbled into it when they did the Jimmy Butler trade and they had JJ Redick, and they finally had the perfect construction around them. They went into, you know, the last shot of the game 7 against the team that won the finals, and then they blew the whole thing up, and they bring in Josh Richardson, who is a nice player and I think can help a lot of teams, but is a defensive oriented player who the Sixers have asked to do some perimeter creation. At the start of the year, he was the backup point guard, and he just couldn't do it. He's just not good enough offensively. And Tobias Harris, who everybody loves and is a nice player, just has not been good enough. And then the Horford thing has been a disaster. And I just look at this team and I say, I don't think they're good enough.
Wow. So that doesn't change your opinion of the seeding at all? Like winning, like there's no way they're going to, well, I guess like losing in the first round to the Celtics is not more likely to you than the Heat, and losing in the first round, the Sixers are probably going to do something pretty dramatic, right?
Yeah. I think anything being like, if they don't make the conference finals, I'm expecting a lot of significant changes. And even if they make it to the conference finals, I think, for example, I think Brett Brown is gone unless they win the East.
Wow.
He was like very, very close to being fired last year. Yeah. And it's like, there's a common theme here of a front office that is not making the right moves and doesn't have the right priorities in mind. I mean, they've wanted their own coach since the minute that they came into power, even when it was Brian Colangelo, even before he got here, they hired Mike D'Antoni they were hoping to take over for Brett. They've wanted Jay Wright in the past and some others. That's a bit of a tangent, but anyways, this front office just, they are looking in a bad direction on a fairly consistent basis.
Man. This has turned way more like dramatically sad than I expected. I just feel like, get the 6 seed, make the conference finals, la di da.
Yeah, I mean, listen, and like they would, like if they make the conference finals, they can at least say, okay, this is progress. We made it around farther than we did last year.
We lost to a historically good Bucks team. Move on.
Right, but I mean, the truth is, they like had the formula and they blew it up, and now this team doesn't fit. And they're locked into $180 million for Tobias Harris, who is like a good player, but I mean, is nowhere near 5 years at $180 million.
He's become a punching bag in the Fieldhouse group chat because, you know, I talked about for forever that Tobias Harris is better than Bojan, and he is still better than Bojan. But now we always talk like, okay, in the summer we were saying, oh, Tobias on his deal or Bojan on his deal. And at first I was like, yeah, maybe think about Tobias. He's that much better. And I'm like, nope, no. No way.
Yeah. Listen, and I like Tobias. Like, I really do. I don't.
Good player.
I don't. And yeah, he's a good player, just not good enough. And then there's this Horford contract that's 4 years, $109 million.
That's not too bad.
Right. But the only way they can get out of it at this point is if they give up, like, whatever, like, semblance of an asset they still have. But it's questionable if they even have that because they traded so much of them for Tobias Harris.
That's true. They need that first to convey just to maybe move Horford.
Yep.
That's interesting. What a dynamic that would be.
Yeah.
Tanking to keep a pick to trade your prime free agent.
Yeah.
That would be wild.
Yeah. Everything involving the Sixers is incredibly bizarre and in the end turns very sad. And I always enjoy going on podcasts of hosts of other teams, and then they're like, oh wow. And it's like, yep, this is what covering the Sixers is like.
That could end up being me next year if if the Vic stuff gets louder and louder with other teams next year, we'll just be like, well, I'm not really sure what the hell's going to happen next.
Yeah.
You don't. So you would really rather play the Celtics than the Pacers if you're the Sixers in the first round?
Oh, I would. Like
the Heat schedule. Well,
I would rather. I mean, I would rather play the Pacers in a vacuum, but I would rather play the Celtics in the 3-6 than the Pacers in the 4-5, and then have to move on to Milwaukee.
It's the Bucks. That makes sense. That makes sense. So I've always been thinking that and a lot of experts are predicting the Pacers finish 6, blah, blah, blah. And I think, you know, as much as Sabonis can do what he can against Tice, and they've done okay against the Celtics this year, like, I think they're just so much better equipped to play the Heat than the Celtics that they would try to keep 5. And with – so I've messaged you a million times. For those who are listening, I've tried to get Adam on this a million times. But I've always thought that the Sixers – would really like 6. And that would make it easier for the Pacers to do their thing, especially if they win their first game. But now this is even more the 76ers liking the 6 seed than I thought. This is like the 76ers kind of need the 6 seed.
Yeah. Yeah. I really do think that like it's kind of imperative that they get it. And I think in the end
– not the Celtics, the 6 seed. That's the important part.
Right, right, which is like a crazy thing to say, especially for a team that was like claiming that they were going to be better than the Bucks this season after the Bucks won, you know, 60-something games. But, I mean, that's where we are at this point. You can't get caught up in what you thought before, you know, the whole sunk cost fallacy thing. And, like, they're just not good enough to be playing the Bucks in the second round.
So this is tangent to the things you've been saying, not related to the Pacers at all. It's really going to be Brett Brown that takes it instead of Elton Brand?
Yeah, yeah.
That seems misguided to me.
Right, and it is.
Okay, be good.
Yeah, I mean, the Sixers, like, if you want a perfect illustration of how it works with the Sixers and the discourse between the front office and the coach, they lost to the team that went on to win the NBA championship on a Game 7 buzzer beater when they had 7 legitimate NBA players on their entire roster. The reason they lost that series was because they couldn't find a third bench player who could actually play. They were trying Boban, who can't move from side to side, which it turns out is not successful against Kawhi Leonard. And they were like bringing in Greg Monroe, who they got off the buyout market like on the day before the playoff deadline, and all of these crazy things that they were trying when they just like didn't have any good players. And it was like painfully obvious that the front office like cashed in everything on Tobias Harris and then like didn't even bother to go trade for like, I don't know, Dewayne Dedmon or any like run of the mill rotation player that might have legitimately tipped the scales in that series.
If only they had like 3 second round picks they could have traded or something.
Right. And then, right. And by the way, this year in this past draft, they had 3 top 35 picks as a team that was about to be a perennial luxury tax team. They need cost control talent, especially after they traded Landry Shamet and the Tobias Harris deal. And they come away with 1 player. And Matisse Thybulle is like fun and was a great pick and will help the Sixers, great defensive prospect. But to have 3 picks and only come away with 1 player is a disaster. Anyways, they lose that Toronto series despite not having NBA players. And then when the series is over, the story is whether or not they're going to fire Brett Brown. And it's just absurd. And like I think there could be some benefit to having a new voice in the room for guys like Simmons and Embiid. And especially like a team that often looks sluggish on the road and doesn't bring their A game when they need to, like that I think is a fair indictment of Brett, but he's far from the problem.
I agree. Maybe, wow. So I remember you had a cryptic tweet like Bam Adebayo is going to be the starting power forward for the Heat or whatever in the year and a half, in 2 years or something, implying that it would be Joel Embiid on the Heat, which Pacers fans would be all really thrilled to see the Heat fill up some of their cap space, but. I was like, oh, no way they would ever trade Joel Embiid. But I guess if things go terrible in the first round this year, maybe.
I think we're still a ways away from that. And I think it would probably necessitate Embiid like facilitating that entire process. But
so they would have to have 2 bad playoffs in a row then.
Right. Which like is completely feasible because this like they're they are locked stuck into this with
team.
This
is it.
Right. They are at the very least locked into the team with Horford and Harris that doesn't make any sense for this year. And like, it's completely reasonable to imagine that they might have a very poor playoff showing this year. And then what happens if just nobody wants Horford, or even if you trade him for some, you know, run of the mill expiring contract to get off the future money, and then you're still just not good enough and you flame out again. And then it's like, okay, what is Joel Embiid waiting for? Why not force his way out?
Yeah. Wow. So if the Pacers are on the up, if they can keep Vic, man, they can leapfrog the Sixers team much quicker than everybody thought, including me.
Yeah, and I don't mean to be all doomsday, but I mean things are trending in a very negative direction right now.
Well,
and
even you look the doomsday and happy day stuff, the NBA just changes so fast these days.
Yeah, yeah. And I think the Sixers are an example of that. I mean, 2 years ago, they won 16 games in a row to end the regular season. They were the 3 seed. At one point in the playoffs, were the Vegas favorite to win the East with rookie Ben Simmons and second full season Joel Embiid and all these young players with basically like J.J. Redick and Amir Johnson as the veterans. And 2 years later, like, they could very well be past their peak. And it's like scary to say, and maybe it's not true because obviously Ben Simmons is not even done his rookie contract yet. Embiid is still relatively young, but I mean, everything moves quickly and they had their chance at cap space. They saved it for dating back to when Sam Hinkie was here. They didn't take on long-term contracts. They kept financial flexibility, and that turned into $300 million for Tobias Harris and Al Horford.
Man, that sounds like doomsday, even if it's not.
Yeah.
All right. I got to end with a Pacers-y question.
Okay.
And it's not related to seeding at all. It's not related to the Sixers. It's kind of related to the Sixers, you'll see. What can be expected of TJ McConnell in the playoffs?
Oh, love it. okay. So I didn't expect a TJ question, but this is good. I actually like think he's probably an interesting playoff player. There is like the obvious shooting limitation with him where like defenses will try to expose that. But he was very successful in the Sixers series with the Celtics a couple years ago. He actually like basically carried them to their only win in that series. I mean, the one thing that you can always say for TJ, aside from that he has the best 16-foot leaning mid-range jumper in the league.
I hate it every time, but he makes enough of them, so it's okay.
Every single time it seems like a ridiculous shot, and it's like, oh, he made it. he is somebody who I constantly trust to make the right decision.
Yes.
On either side of the ball, even when he has a limitation, whether that's, you know, getting overpowered by a bigger player on defense or he can't get by someone, he like always knows what he's going to do and he knows the right move to make. And I think that there's an added value of that in the playoffs when things are more intense, you're playing against more competitive defenses. So like, I do think that like there is some value in that. Especially like you don't want like a J.R. Smith type scenario happening from the finals a couple years ago where the guy doesn't even know the score. Like TJ is someone who like you can put into any situation and trust that like he knows what he's going to do.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to him in the playoffs after watching Corey Joseph. I like Corey Joseph a lot. Corey Joseph's big advantage in the regular season was that he out-efforted guys and that went away in the postseason. McConnell's skills.
I love Corey Joseph.
I love Corey Joseph. I am one of the biggest Corey Joseph fans amongst NBA media people. I
am as well. I would like to propose that we start a Corey Joseph fan club together.
I would love that. Sixers could really use Corey Joseph right now.
Yes, they could.
Really use Corey Joseph.
As I've been saying for about 3 years, they could really use Corey Joseph.
But I think that Corey Joseph's big advantage of out-efforting guys went away in the playoffs. And McConnell's advantage of can get into the lane whenever he wants will still be useful in the postseason, especially because he usually plays against second units. So yeah, his shooting limitation is a disaster, 5-for-15 on the entire season. But I think with the Pacers, and this was true with the Sixers a lot too, although they had two more ball-dominant guys than the Pacers do now, is that he always has the ball in his hands. So it's like very infrequent that, you know, there's a guy guarding him away from the play to clog things up. But yeah, he's got the ball enough that it limits him. So I'm looking forward to him in the playoffs.
Yeah, if you want some optimism, I would go watch his highlights from Game 4 of Sixers Celtics in 2018. I think he had 19 or 20 points. And it's what you just described. I mean, it's the classic good TJ game like he had against the Sixers early on this year, actually, where he just was getting into the lane whenever he wanted. and he has that mid-range jumper, and he's like surprisingly crafty at the rim, and he just like scored points. It's like weird to just say score points, obviously, but sometimes it's just as simple as that.
And his best ever game was that buzzer beater in Orlando. So maybe Orlando is his place.
Yeah.
Was that our best ever play, I guess? Was
Yeah, he had a few game winners that year, but that was one of them.
Well, I'm picking that one for the sake of concluding this conversation about TJ. Adam, thanks a bunch for coming on, man.
Thank you.
Where can people follow you in your never-ending quest to find a Sixers trade with every team in the league?
I write for the Rights to Ricky Sanchez podcast website. That is rightstorickysanchez.com. And you can find me on Twitter at Sixers Adam.
Sixers Adam bombs away all the Sixers news you need. And we'll cover their fight for whatever seed they end up going for. Ideally for the Pacers at 6, but we'll see. I'm sure I'll have Adam back on to preview the Pacers-Sixers game in about a month from now. Literally 1 month from this Wednesday. So thank you guys so much for listening. Adam will be back on Friday, and we'll see you then.